we're talking about Reb Leibel Eger's life, and we're learning some of the Torahs woven into the story of his life, and then we're going to be, after we discuss a little bit more of the biography and do a little bit more of the Torah, then we're going to spend just a good couple of weeks going through some important teachings of Reb Leibel Eger. We were talking last week about the transformation of Reb Leibel from a chassid to a rebbe, that he became becoming the tzaddik, and the awesome responsibility he saw in that position of being rebbe, of being tzaddik, that it's not just a question of, certainly not a question of kavod, and we'll talk about his refusal to accept even pidyonis and to be supported. He was an extraordinary person that saw a tremendous opportunity in the position of leadership to change the lives of the people, and at the same time, instead of him becoming more elevated in his own eyes, he became more and more humble. And we were talking about that piece last week with Korach. We're going to learn another piece from Parshas Korach in a few minutes. I just wanted to begin by reading to you a couple of sentences you don't have in this handout. In Vayakel, where the Torah begins the parasha by telling us that Moshe went and gathered the Jews together. So Reb Leibel says, Vayakel Moshe called us bnei Yisrael. Hine yadua shemoshe Rabbeinu al v'shal nikra rayim himna. He said that Moshe Rabbeinu was called in the Zohar the loyal shepherd, the faithful shepherd. Shahayro and nem on the Yisrael. He was the shepherd of the Jewish people. And we see that the last thing that he was worried about before he died, before it came time to make the preparations for his death, was that there should be a proper leader to take care of the Jewish people after he would leave. And the language that he used is, Yidavin to Hashem, do not let the people be like sheep that do not have a shepherd. And the meaning, he was the one that was the Rayim Himna, he was the shepherd of the Jewish people. And he explains why. This is the mida of the faithful shepherd. That even if there's one little animal that strays away from the flock, like we know that's how Moshe Rabbeinu was tested. That's how Moshe Rabbeinu was tested to see if he was worthy for the position when he went after that one that wandered away. So the job of the Roya Neman, of the faithful shepherd, is to see to it that not even one is able to stray away. L'kabes is kol nidachim hatzon. He gathers all those who are nidachim, all those who have wandered away. L'bli yipaket meheder shum echad. And not even one should be missing. Rak l'nahil es kulam biyachad, to bring all of the sheep, to conduct their lives, to bring them together. Therefore, this is the connection to Moshe Rabbeinu. Lahakil ulakabes is called prote nafshus Yisrael. It says Vayakel Moshe. It's not only talking about what Moshe Rabbeinu did that one day. Vayakel Moshe, that Moshe Rabbeinu gathered together, the Rebbe Reb Leibel is saying that this is the job of the tzaddik. This is the job of a Jewish leader, to gather Jews together. Vayakel Moshe. Lahakil ulakabes is called prote nefashos Yisrael lehiyosim kulam nechlolim mechlal kedushas Yisrael, and it doesn't just mean to gather. You know, we don't have any idea of making marches of the million, right? And we don't need such things, and we don't believe in such things. The point here is not just it's not physically gathering Jews together in one room. The point is that every single Jew should belong to the Jewish people. Even if he's a Jew that's stuck by himself in some island, he should be a Jew. And he should be connected to the Torah of the Jewish people, and to the people, and to Israel. And that's the job of the tzaddik. V'zeo vayakel Moshe es kol hadas b'nei Yisrael. And that is the meaning of vayakel Moshe es kol hadas b'nei Yisrael. So obviously, Reb Leibel saw this as his main task, as his main responsibility, to gather Jews together. Now, to understand this on a deeper level, take a look at the page that you have in front of you, the first page where it says number 2. Right, the right-hand side of the page at the beginning. V'ho'y ha'ish asher evchar bo, Mateyu Yifrach, v'ashikosim y'alahi es tulunos b'nei Yisrael. Now, we learned the Torah, we learned the next Torah we learned last week, where Korach, of course, was leading a rebellion against the authority of Moshe and Aaron. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, Hashem devised a proof or a verification of Moshe Rabbeinu and of Aaron's true leadership. And that was with the staff that would blossom. And we spoke about that last week, where it says, Ha'ish Asher Evchabo, the one high will choose. Meaning in the future tense, and we discussed that at length, why is it written in the future tense? And the Torah says, and by doing this, Vashikosim Elias Tlunos B'nei Yisrael, Hashem said, then all the complaints against the Jewish people will be removed. So once again here, since Reb Leibel sees this as the proof of the legitimate authority of the Jewish leader, therefore Reb Leibel is going to show us that concealed in this test of Ahayayish Hashem Chabo, concealed here is not just some sort of a miraculous blossoming of a staff, but the qualities that are required of a true Jewish leader. And this is what I want to bring out, which we began with last week, how Reb Leibel viewed his position as being Rebbe, and why he was so frightened, why he was so reluctant to assume the leadership of the Jewish people. Once you understand how he viewed a Rebbe, what he saw that what the job of the tzaddik was, you'll understand. So he writes the following. Hamoyfes hazeh ha'yil haros, the purpose of this miracle was to demonstrate. Shema shelo nivchar Korach, why wasn't Korach chosen? After all, Korach was an extremely great man, he was a brilliant man, he had, seems, wonderful qualities. Avshah ha'yagod l'hashevet, even though he was considered to be the greatest of the tribe, of Levi, who mipnei she'ikar ritzoni is baruch rak b'tzmichas hatov v'habrocha v'hasholom. So Reb Leibel writes that this test was to prove, this blossoming staff was to prove, that what really Hashem wants of a Jew, what Hashem is baruch wants of our people is tzmichas hatov, the blossoming of good, growing towards something, v'habrocha, and there should be peace, and blessing, v'hasholom, and peace. What grew out of Korach? In other words, if you want to understand who was the person, you take a look and see what grew out of this person. What came from this person? It says in the Pasuk, Merishoyim Yetzei Resha, that from the wicked, wickedness will sprout. So what the Baruch Shalom expects of a Jewish leader is that it does not mean that he has to be the best or everything has to be perfect in his time. The meaning of a Jewish leader is that person will provide the Jewish people with the opportunity, with the desire to grow, to change, to blossom. That's why it says, "Umikorach." What came out from Korach was nitzmach ha'hipuch shehu inyan machlokus. Instead of coming out, the tzaddik is supposed to be a source of blessing. The tzaddik is supposed to be a source of peace. That's what a tzaddik is supposed to be. Things grow, things develop, things mature. And instead, Korach brought into the world what? Machlokas, divisiveness. Korach brought machlokas. He brought the Jews to rebel and to fight with each other. Umikorach nitzmach hehipuch shu inyan machlokas, which is the inyan of machlokas. Or ritzon yisbrochu rak ben nefesh asher shorsha notu irak letzmicha upricha. And Hashem only wants a Jew. The only one who will lead his people is someone whose soul has the ability to bring Jews to becoming better. To bring Jews to that point that we just read in Vayakhel, Jews that they should get closer with one another. Korach didn't do that. Korach tore Jews apart from each other. He broke up families. He broke up the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu was Vayakhel. He brought Jews together. He helped Jews grow closer to each other and closer to Hashem. That's the simon of the leader. The simon is smicha upricha, growing and blossoming. Which means what? To be mashpia, to bring toiva and bracha, good and blessing, that all blossoms forth, that grows out of what? Asiya shalom. When there's peace between Jews. Asiya shalom. When there's peace between Jews. Ben kol olam, between one Jew and another. Ben ish l'ishto, between a husband and a wife. This is what Aaron HaKohen was busy doing his entire life. Aaron was busy making peace between Jews, making peace between husbands and wives, and so on. And from that person, from Aaron HaKohen, came out only more bracha, more shefa, more good things came out from Aaron HaKohen's presence. Jews growing closer to one another and closer to Hashem. Adashi yagia hashalom ben Yisrael avim shebishamayim. If you're able to make peace between Jews, then ultimately you're able to bring peace between Hashem, between Jews and Hashem. Jews who are at war with each other, Jews who can't get along with each other, they can't get along with the Baruch Shalom either. They can't get along with the Kadosh Baruch Hu either. It says in the Chabad Svarim that the shorish of Ahavas Yisrael, the shorish of loving a Jew, the tzaddikim from Chabad said that if you don't love other Jews, you don't really love God. Because the root of it is, Ohev ma sheha'ahuv ohev. The nature of a person is that if you're in love with someone, that whatever that person who you are in love with loves, you also love. You also love. Right? If there's someone that you're deeply in love with, and that person loves someone else, loves something, then it brings you closer to that. Therefore, it's not possible that a Jew should hate Jews and love God. It's not possible. Because God, more than anything, loves Jews. So how is it possible for you to God forbid, hate that which is most loved by the one you claim to love, who's Hashem? If you really love him, you can't despise his children. You can't despise Jews. Therefore, the tzaddikim explain what Reb Leibel is saying here, is that Aaron HaKohen had this unique ability to bring peace between Jews, friends, husbands and wives, and so on. And therefore, he was the one who would bring the karbonis that we learned about last week, that would bring one Jew closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He has the ability to make people become better and want to be better. And when there's peace amongst Jews and there's the possibility of finding that shalom between one Jew and the Rabbanu Shalom. That's the meaning of the pasuk. The one whom I will choose, Mateo Yifrach, his staff will blossom. Romez Bemilos Mateo Yifrach. What is the meaning of Mateo Yifrach, that his staff will blossom? Shekol Nitiosav. The word Mateo, there's a very beautiful Torah saying. The word Mateo, which means a stick, is also connected to the word Nitiya in Hebrew. Lahatos, which means to be inclined towards. That's why a stick is called a mata also. It's connected to the word Nitiya. It inclines you towards one direction or the other. That's the purpose of the staff. So, Mateu means, who is the man that I will choose? The one, Hashem, Evkabo Mateu Yifrach. That means that he's only inclined towards blossoming. He's only inclined towards bringing the best out of people. That's all he does. Brings the best out of people and brings the best kivyochol from Hashem. He brings bracha and shefa wherever this tzaddik goes. The Aaron type of a tzaddik, whatever he does, wherever he goes, he's inclined towards growth and development. Positive growth and development. Which Rav Kook, and I mentioned many times in Shul, Rav Kook used to say that the true tzaddikim, you know, he was always being criticized by his enemies, Rav Kook, until they needed money from him or they needed permission slips of all different types, all different notes and documents, because he was the chief rabbi. So, Rav Kook was in certain circles in Yerushalayim, and Eretz Yisrael, you know, was terribly mistreated and was despised. And Rav Kook said, and Rav Kook never responded to these people. He never responded. Even though he was sharper and smarter than all of them, he never responded. And he begged his followers that if you love me, you will only go in a peaceful way. So Rav Kook said, because the true tzaddikim, they don't complain about darkness, they just bring more light. True tzaddikim don't scream and yell and cry about all the darkness, they just bring more light. And mimela, by its own, the darkness will dissipate if you add more light. The true tzaddikim add more light. So what he's saying about Aaron HaKohen is, everywhere Aaron HaKohen would go, peace was sure to follow. Simcha and bracha. That's why Mateo Yifrach, everything about him was inclined towards what? Blossoming. Pricha means to blossom. Everything about him. Mateo, from the word netiah. His entire inclination was only to see good and to bring out the good in other Jews. Shekol netiyosev heima lahavi pricha. Shehutzmichas Yeshua. That's why the name David HaMelech, Mashiach Sekenu, as Tzemach David Avdecha, Mehera Satzmiach. Right, one of the names of Mashiach is Tzemach. Tzemach Tzedek. Tzemach, which means growth. Because that's the desire of the Tzaddik, is to bring Tzmicha and Pricha. Tzadik Atamayifra. Shehutzmichas Yeshua ubracha v'chol tov liYisrael, to bring more bracha to Jews, to bring more panasa, to bring more simcha, and so on. Vashikaisim elai es tlunos b'nei Yisrael. So Hashem said, we're going to have this test, and I will remove the complaints that the Jewish people have against me. So Reb Leibel explains, what does that mean, the complaints, to remove the complaints, to quiet down the complaints? Romeh, shagam ze yeh netiyas ha-nefesh asher bocha bo Hashem. This is another sign of the one whom God has chosen. And when he was writing this, Reb Leibel was not only speaking about in the time of Tanakh, he was speaking about the position to be a Hasidic Rabbi, to be a Tzaddik, to be a leader of Jews. This is another sign. Sheyeh kol shukoso laso sholom ben nafshis Yisrael. To take away complaints that Jews have. Right? It says that the one whose staff will blossom, so right, he's the one that I've chosen, and I will remove all complaints from amongst the Jewish people. That's what it says. Vashigas tlunos b'nei Yisrael. Me'alai tlunos b'nei Yisrael. So Reb Leibel says, this means that the way of the tzaddik is to help Jews stop complaining. That sounds like that's a very formidable task. Right? How do you stop Jews from complaining? That they shouldn't have tainus. Jews shouldn't have complaints one against the other. That Jews shouldn't have complaints against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. They shouldn't have tainus. This is the main role of the tzaddik. To bring shalom between Jews. To bring shalom between Jews and Hashem. That a Jew shouldn't have tainus. People have bitterness because of things that happened in the past. And how come Hashem didn't do this and Hashem didn't do that? And they feel a distance from Hashem. How could I daven to him? How could I be close to him? He did this to me. Hashem did that to me. He didn't give me this. He didn't give me that. Same thing with people between one Jew and another, between a husband and wife, tainus, complaints, and difficulties, and so on. The job of the tzaddik is the job of Aaron HaKohen. And that job, the Torah says, is v'ashikosi melai es tlunos b'nei Yisrael, to remove complaints. The Jews should be at shalom. Jews should be in a state of peace with each other and with their Baruch Shalom. They should be appeased. They shouldn't be angry. They shouldn't have tainus. Many, many people, when you talk to them, and you scratch and you get deep down, you'll find that they're filled with tainus. Complaints. A husband against a wife, wife against a husband, with parents, you know, you hear these things. I mean, almost everybody that over the years that I've been talking to that comes to discuss different problems, you know, they start to talk about, well, you know, my father and my mother, v'chulu. And the parent might not have even known there was a taina. Everything was great. The kid, you know, shows warmth and affection. Everything is fine. And it's a beautiful family. They have barbecue and Mother Day and Father Day and Brother Day, Sister Day. Everybody's happy. Everybody loves each other. And then later on, 20 years later, I'm thinking to myself when I talk to my kids at Marshall, she's going to go tell some rabbi of hers. You know, I don't know what she's going to say. You know, their tluna is tainus. How can I find a lot of Jews feel 30, 40 years later, that my parents favored the other child. They have a tainus still. They have a bitterness and an anger that my father loved the other one and my mother loved the other one more than me. This goes on for an entire life. It's the same thing people have between them and the Rebbeinu Shalom, tainus and this and that. So the job of the tzaddik is to cause Jews to be appeased, to work things out between Jews, one Jew and another, to be able to make shalom with another Jew, to make shalom with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, to make peace ultimately within yourself. The tzaddik helps you to make peace within yourself, to transform you from being a person that's stuck, that can't grow. Because an angry person, a person that's filled with tainus, he's the opposite of what the pasuk is talking about. The pasuk is saying pricha and smicha. The potential of a Jew is to always be blossoming, right? To always be growing. When a person is angry and bitter, it's just the opposite. He can't go anywhere. He's stuck always. He's like that. He's shut. He's closed. He can't develop. He can't grow. So the job of the tzaddik is to remove the tainus. And in removing the tainus and removing the bitterness, the anger, so then the Jewish people are able to grow. They're able to blossom and become who they can become. To arouse, to awaken the Jewish people that there shouldn't be any tainus, there shouldn't be any things between them. Mostly people are going to therapy and have difficulties. It's with these tainus, all kinds of tainus. somebody that I know that I haven't spoken to in many years and a whole discussion, and he wrote me a letter about something that I said when we were in 10th grade, which he wrote over what I said. I didn't remember that I said it. I can't say that I didn't. And it wasn't such a horrible thing. You know, I didn't mean that. I couldn't have meant it because I cared for the guy, but he just took it completely different way. And I never understood why he avoided the friendship for so many years. You know, and I didn't pursue it after some time. I sort of let it go. I saw he wasn't interested. But, you know, when we were younger and in college and yeshiva, I tried calling him once in a while and he wasn't the same. And I asked him, is something wrong? Are you all right? No, whatever. You know, I'll call you back. I'll be in touch. It's okay, Moshe. And now, finally, he wrote, like an Erev Yom Kippur thing was bothering him. He wrote me a letter and he said that I said something, you know, when we were in 10th grade, which I don't remember. And he wrote what it was, and I certainly didn't, it wasn't at all, it couldn't have been what he thought. And from that came out a darkness and a smallness that kept two people apart. Now I have a tainus. Now I have a tainus. But, you know, the years, it's chaval in the years that are wasted with all the tlunos, complaints. So the job of the tzaddik is that the Jews shouldn't have complaints. They shouldn't have this anger, this bitterness. And they shouldn't have, God forbid, complaints against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. They should be at peace with Hashem. The tzaddik, by the force of his love of Jews and by the force of his love of Hashem and his kedusha, his holiness, he's able to take this away. When you go to a tzaddik, you don't hate people. You know that? If you've ever had the schus to be in the presence of a tzaddik, when you're with the tzaddik, it could be right before and maybe a little bit afterwards, but when you're with the tzaddik, you can't see wrong in people. When you're with the tzaddik, you look at Jews in that way. The same when the tzaddik talks to you. I remember when I've been zeichet a few times about the Amshanov in Yerushalayim. He's like from 1,000 years ago, this is the Amshanov. Something special. A few people here have been by the Amshanov. So there was somebody in America. There was somebody in America who has unfortunately had come down with cancer. And I was going to Israel, and this person, the woman asked me, are you going to any tzaddikim? I said, yes, I plan to go to a certain tzaddikim. Could you bring my name? I said, of course. So when I came to the Amshanov, so I said, there's somebody in America that asked me a taivi. He said, what was it? So I said, there's a woman that our family knows that she came down with cancer. So if you've ever been by the Amshanov, so he went, and I got scared the way he reacted. He reacted violently and he started shaking his head and he said the name, and it was a whole thing. It was an unbelievable thing. That we wouldn't, you know, even on a relative, the way, and then he got up and he was walking back and forth, and It was unbelievable. The tzaddik feels that. And when you're sitting there, you become uplifted by his love of Jews. And you think, and then in a moment you think, how could I be so stupid the way that I don't look at, you know, I don't even feel this way. I don't react this way to people that I love who aren't well. What's the matter with me? And you want to look at Jews in a better way. You want to look at Jews in a better way. It's a simen muvak of a tzaddik. If when you're with that person, you feel better about Jews, it's a simen muvak that he's a true tzaddik. And if you're with a certain person who calls himself a tzaddik, he calls himself a rashiva, whatever, a rabbi or a rav, and when you're with him, it brings you to look down upon Jews and to think less of Jews. It's a simen that he's not a tzaddik. He might be smart, he might be brilliant, but a tzaddik, when you're with a tzaddik, you want to do toivis for yidden. You want to be better to other Jews. You want to be better to the Rebbein Shalom. You don't want to have tlunis. You're tired of your complaints. You're tired of your anger. And you want to be better. Kichein ikar ha-shalom ha-amiti. Because this is what peace really means. Peace doesn't mean, like they say, peaceful coexistence. I think President Carter was the first one to use that term, peaceful coexistence. The Al Hasaga, the understanding of peace in the secular world, means that people don't kill each other. People leave each other alone. That's not shleimus. That's not what we're dreaming about. That's not the days of Mashiach. It's more than that. It's that people should be able, mamish, to connect one to the other in the deepest way, and all the obstructions should be removed. Shamashpia yachzer acha hamakabel lahoshev aseilov. That the mashpia, that the husband should go seeking his wife, that the parents should go seeking the children, that one friend should go seek out another friend. That's what it means. That the mashpia, the one who is mashpia, should draw near to him once again, the one who's more passive, the one who needs him. And so on and so forth. V'zov ashikoisi me'alayis tulinos b'nei Yisrael. This is the meaning of the test of Korach to distinguish between Korach and Aaron. Korach brought more machlokas to the world. When you were next to Korach, you thought badly of Moshe and Aaron. When you were next to Aaron HaKohen, you thought about any Jew, even the worst Russia. When you were with Aaron HaKohen, you always thought the man has, there's still hope. There's still hope. We can still be Makar of him. There's still something good in him. Vayikach, so what do you want to say? He took people, like Rashi says, and he misled them. He led them into that place that's negative, to that place that's destructive. And therefore, this is what the Rebbein Shlomo is telling the Jewish people. Look at the difference between Korach and Aaron. And as Hashem is saying, I agree. Korach is a genius. He learns very well. And Korach has great, great charisma, and he has great koiches and nefesh. There's no question he's a great man. But you know what just happened. Take a look yourselves. You know what's happening now. When you're with Korach, you're angry. When you're with Korach, you feel inside of you a destructive type of an energy that's telling you that this is no good, that's no good. The Baruch Shalom hasn't been fair, right? Well, that was what Korach was saying. Rav lechem b'nei leiv, right? Why should they be different? Kol eidu kulim kadosh b'sech Hashem. What makes Moshe and Aaron better than other Jews? And that divisiveness, that anger and so on, that's what you feel when you're with Korach. And what do you feel with Aaron? What do you feel with Aaron? One thing. Smicha and Pricha. Blossoming and growing. There were husbands and wives that weren't talking. Aaron HaKohen went to speak to them. 15 minutes later, they're walking down the boardwalk happily married. Right? Old friends that had a big fight. Aaron HaKohen, his whole life. Oyev Shalom, Oyev Sebrius, that's what he did. Levarchas Am Yisrael B'Yahava, with love. That was the avoid of Aaron HaKohen. Haynu Sha Nefesh Hazesh Ani Bocher Yegorem Godel HaShalom. The sign of the one who I have chosen is the one who brings, who increases love, who increases peace in the world. That's the sign. Talmidei Chachamim, Marvim Shalom Va'olam. Talmidei Chachamim Shalom. You know how many times I've had people that have said to me, "Yeah, sure, Tamichem Avishalom." You know, they heard about this some yeshiva that the son-in-law and the father and the brother-in-law and they're all fighting and the half the Baruchim are leaving. So someone came to me, "Yeah, Tamichem Avishalom." Here, these are Tamichem Avishalom Baruchim. What shalom? The yeshiva broke into 5 different yeshivas and there were only 20 guys to begin with, right? And the yeshivas break 25 guys and the yeshiva 5 different yeshiva look because this one said the Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. A true tzaddik is Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. He brings more shalom to the world. That this summer was the Ptira, the Histalkus of the tzaddik of the Kodesh, the Baba Rabbi. When you think of him, he was an Aaron HaKoyin of this generation in the most unbelievable way. The Baba never once didn't go to these meetings, didn't go to that meeting, no conferences, no nothing. One thing. You're a Jew, makes no difference with a yarmulke, without a yarmulke, black hat, strimal, kippah, seruga, whatever you are. He would take you and give you a hug and he brought you next to him. And he would encourage you and machazik you and he made you feel better. He made you love other Jews. He couldn't stand. Once I was reading in one of the things, one of the haspedim that after he was nifter. So, you know, he never got angry, the Babas. What happened? They said there was one time that he got angry. What happened? There were certain, kanoim from another Hasidic group that, strong-willed individuals, that, extreme people, that something, I don't know what the Baba, but I don't know what they found there, but they put out all over Borough Park and Williamsburg, they put some horrible thing against the Baba Rabbi. On every single lamppost and everything, you know, they built it in 15 minutes, right? The whole place was plastered with this terrible thing. You know, probably something with it sounded like it was something with Zionism, that they made him into a Zionist, whatever it was. But they had all over. So, the Hasidim, you know, the Hasidim were cooking. They saw this. You attacked their Rebbe. You know, next to Hashem, that's the worst thing you could do, right? So the Hasidim were angry. And it was brought to the Rebbe's attention from the Mishpacha, what happened and the things that were posted. And they said it was one of the few times they ever remember the Baba Rebbe showing any temper, is that he was at the Tish, I think maybe it was on Shabbos or whatever it was, and he gave a bang on the table, and he said, "Those of you who claim to be my followers and who claim to love me, if you would truly love me, you would know that what I want more than anything is peace among Jews. Therefore, if you truly love me, I absolutely forbid anybody here to answer, to respond, to even take down one of the papers. I absolutely forbid it. And if not, then you're not my follower. You never were one of my chassidim, because this is all I want in my life, is that Jews should be at shalom, should be at peace with each other." So he said. And they saw that he was angry about it, because he heard there were some guys that were looking to rumble. All right? So he was angry. That's a tzaddik. That's what it means. That's what it means to lead Jews. Not to tumult and to make this and machloikis and that. You know, you could have, it could be for the most noble cause. The most noble cause, and you want to do something good, you want to fix something in the community, it should be a perfect Erev, it should be a perfect kashrus, it should be a perfect mikveh, it should be perfect schools. And along the way to trying to do that, you could be destroying and crushing so many people, ruining their lives and their reputations and hurting them as people. And all of this is under the banner of what? To improve Yiddishkeit. There's a way to do something good in a good way, and the tzaddik knows how to do it in a good way, even if it takes longer. The tzaddik will do it and it will take him longer. But the tzaddik won't do it in a way that harms people, that hurts people. Therefore, you found that the true tzaddikim didn't answer back. They didn't answer back. The Satmarov didn't answer back. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, even though they didn't answer back. Rav Kook didn't answer back. They didn't answer back. They just added more light. That's all they did. More good. More Ahavas Yisrael. That was their whole life. The Rebbein Shlom Kivyochel says that Aaron HaKoyin, he puts me into a good mood. He makes me want to run after Jews and bring them back to me. So I should be able to give them all the brachas. Like the Bedichshuva, right? These tzaddikim, like the Kedushas Levi, that he couldn't see anything negative in a Jew. And he always tried to say something which was positive, which was good, and to bring out the good in other people. So here, in this piece that we just learned, again, not that Reb Leibel thought he was being autobiographical, but this is what he believed was required of a tzaddik. Therefore, I think that it's probably safe to say that amongst all of the Talmidei Baal Shem Tov, now I'm taking a little bit of a chance with that, I'm going out on a limb, but I think that amongst all the Talmidei Baal Shem Tov, the three tzaddikim in whose svarim, in whose writings, and whose teachings we find the most amount of chizik, of constant chizik, of ahava, of an outpouring of love, and giving more and more chizik, the three, the Kedushas Levi by Ditshava, right? I'm talking about besides the Baal Shem. Baal Shem didn't write, but from the writings of the Kedushas Levi, the writings of Rabbi Nachman Breslover, and the writings of Reb Leibel Eiger, where the Kemat is not one piece in Teres Emes where there isn't something of chizik and bringing more bracha and more shefa, more to the Jewish people. Therefore, we find that when Reb Leibel became Rebbe, very much different from the leadership of the Kotzker, which we said was distant from the simple people from the Hamayinam, Reb Leibel became deeply involved mundane things, the most mundane affairs of his chassidim, became deeply involved in helping them and caring for them and being involved. And as I said before, that throughout all of this, Reb Leibel refused to accept pidyonis, something which was looked down upon by many non-chassidim. The rebbes were accepting kvitluch with money, which it was used, of course, for tzedakah, but Reb Leibel said, you'll give your tzedakah to whoever you want, and he did not accept any form of pidyonis. This behavior of the tzaddik of Reb Leibel Eiger brought Chassidus back to Lublin in a very strong way. See, since the seer of Lublin had passed away, by this time it was already approximately more than half a century, but the Chayzer from Lublin, when the Chayzer from Lublin was alive, Lublin was the center of Chassidus, probably in the world. In all of Europe, right, the world. I mean, the Chassidus wasn't, it's like, you know, in America, they have the World Series, and it's only in America. Yeah, New York now, right? They always say the World Series, like, what are they thinking in South America and all these places? The World Series, a guy that they could, right? So in Europe, the city of Lublin was the center of Chassidus, and for some time after the death of the seer, things had shifted away a little bit from there. But with Reb Leibel, thousands and thousands of Jews began coming back to Lublin, to seek out Reb Leibel. And this was not only Hasidim, Maskilim also. Now, you know, Maskilim were in the, we're talking about at that time already, the Enlightenment had already begin to form into the Reform, what's called the modern Reform movement. And there were very, very dangerous winds that were blowing throughout all of Europe, and many Jews were going away from the path of Yiddishkeit. Nevertheless, these maskilim, even though generally their attitude about Yiddishkeit was terrible, and when it came to Hasidic Rebbes, it was terrible, shevet terrible, because they saw the Hasidim as being a thorn in their eyes. Here, these were people who were progressive. They could deal with the German rabbis. They could deal with the yeshiva world to some degree. Even though they didn't care for the Frumkeit, but they were able to see them as somewhat cultured. But the Chassidim, the way that they dressed and the way that they spoke, they refused to use any European languages. They wouldn't speak German. They wouldn't speak Polish. Right? They spoke only Yiddish to each other. And in general, they conducted themselves as something as relics of the past. The Maskilim hated Chassidish Rebbes, and they mocked, they made fun, and some of the most vile, obscene literature comes from that period of time by Jews writing against Hasidim. I'm not going to mention the names of some of the books that were written, but they were so extreme that even the greatest Rosh Hashivas, who were not necessarily friends with the Hasidim, that they strongly condemned most of these authors, these writings that came from Maskilim, from the Reformers, who saw the Hasidim as a terrible danger to the progress of their movement, because they were screaming about reform. They were screaming about modernization, and the Hasidim were gaining followers by the hundreds of thousands every year. And this was something that they saw. They couldn't understand what appeal did Hasidus have to people. Why were they drawing more and more people? Here they're offering freedom, they're offering emancipation, they're offering education, equality, and the Hasidim are offering what? They're offering the ghettoization of Jews, the re-ghettoization. They're offering darkness and Gemara and these mystic saint rabbis who were supposed to perform miracles, and they made fun of all of this. Nevertheless, we know that for a fact that hundreds, if not thousands, of maskilim would come to Reb Leib Lahiger. Not all of them became religious. Many of them did become religious. There's a story that they say that one time there was a group of singers. You know, in the Yiddish, they had Yiddish theater. Like they had in New York, they had, you know, Yiddish theater. There were some famous actors and actresses that started in the Yiddish theater. Yiddish theater in Europe was very big for a long time. So there were some singers, who were real kalidas, leitzanim, you know, real jokers, and they were wise guys, stam nobodies. They were coming from the big city of Brod, and they were set to have a performance in Lublin. There was supposed to be this theater, this show was traveling, was going to put on a show in Lublin. And a group of these singers, three or four of these singers were staying in a hotel, a little inn that was down the block from the Bismedrish of Reb Leib Lahiger. It was down the block from Reb Leib Lahiger's Bismedrish. When it came time for Shabbos, so these actors, these singers said to each other, you know, they had a good idea. The famous rabbi, Reb Leib Lahiger, is down the block. Let's go and go to the davening. Let's go to Kabbalah Shabbos and we'll get some good funny material. They used to make fun of tzaddikim. You know that almost all the Yiddish shows, you have a figure of a Rebbe, you have something, you know that. So, let's go get some new material. We'll go to a label. For sure there'll be some funny stuff that he does. So they went to the Bismedrish by Kabbalah Shabbos, and they came to the Bismedrish, and Reb Leib Lahiger used to daven Kabbalah Shabbos every week. Reb Leib Lahiger davened Kabbalah Shabbos every week. And when they came in, they stood there for a minute or two, and Reb Leib Lahiger began with Lechadoidi. He was starting Lechadoidi, and they became filled with such dread and such fear that they began to tremble, they began to shake. This was told over by one of them, that they were terrified, and they felt, one said to the other, we better get out of here. Leitzanis, you can make from a human being. You can make fun of a human being. Of a malach, of an angel, you can't make fun. And if we stay another 2 minutes, we're going to end up being chasidim. And they ran out, you know, they ran out to the street like, you know, like, you remember Lahavdil, you know, the monsters of the Adams family. You know? They ran out onto the street, said, forget it, we're not staying here. There's a similar maisi you might recall from the Kedushas Levi. There's a famous maisi from Baditshava that also there was some, the Baditshava used to make very wild movements. Reb Leib Lahiger also, his davening and everything was very wild. And they were making, also they were imitating somebody perfected, he went for a few weeks to watch the Kedushas Levi when he was davening. The Kedushas Levi was jumping and going on the floor and he was doing somersaults. They say he used to, like Rabbi Kiva used to start, this is Rabbi Kiva too. He used to start davening in one, over here, and he used to end up, the end of davening was on the other side of his medrash. It's the Kedushas Levi's davening was like that. So there was one actor that he made mamash a living like this. He used to imitate, and the non-religious Jews would come to the theater and they would love this stuff, right, to make fun. And there was this person who went for a few weeks and he watched the Kedushas Levi. I think I'm so jealous of him, right? Can you imagine? He was able to see Kedushas Levi. He watched the Kedushas Levi and he got it down almost to a T. He got it perfect. And he was preparing for a few weeks. He was in Baditshev because he heard about the famous Rebbe from Baditshev that has all kinds of weird things. And he had it down pat. And he went, it was in Warsaw or Lublin, someplace that was a big show. And this was the main attraction. It was the rabbi from Baditshev. He was going to make a show. And it was going to be a whole thing, making fun of the Chassidim. And it was going to be the rabbi. It was the rabbi from Baditshev. He was going to do all these weird things. So the maisa was that this fellow, the show started, it was packed. And he gets up and he comes on his first scene and he's supposed to be Baditshev. And he starts to daven. He starts to make fun in the beginning. People are laughing and he's getting into it. And he's going like this for like 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And then he's going with the davening and he's one of the pieces of davening. And he starts to cry. And the Olam is clapping the Gevaldik. Like, you know, he's making, And he starts to cry, and he's crying, and he falls on the floor, and he's sobbing uncontrollably. And at some point, everything just stopped. They were all silent, and they realized that something happened. You know, he's on the level. So he's crying. He's crying. And it was a whole scene. They took him out of there. He became a devoted follower of the Bidishiva. And he said that when he was imitating him, he had it perfect. So in the beginning, he was trying to cry like the Rebbe, but then he said that his heart just opened up. He couldn't hold back. And he said that all of that he had seen, and everything just in a second became clear to him, that this is a show, this is a joke, and that the Rebbe from Bidishiva is the only thing that's real in the entire world. Right, so it's a similar maisa. There are many stories of Jews that became religious. These maskil. Now you have to understand that when you say became religious, these were not like the non-religious Jews of today that didn't learn Torah, that didn't go to yeshiva. These were guys. These guys knew how to learn better than most of the Rosh Hashivas these days. They knew how to learn. These guys knew how to learn. They came from very religious families and they went to yeshiva for many years. They knew how to learn. They were hardcore anti-religious people, really. So it's not like, you know, you give somebody a chant, you put your arm around them, and you sing a niggun, and, you know, he's all right, you know, send them off to Eretz Yisrael for a year, he'll be fine. It wasn't like that. But these are real, real serious scoffers and atheists. And we have many stories about Rabbi Nachman's relationship with these people as well. Rabbi Nachman used to play chess with them. Rabbi Nachman used to play chess. It says in one of the songs, Rabbi Nachman used to play chess. He won over a whole group of them. He played chess with 25 of these people with his eyes blindfolded. And he beat all of them, Rabbi Nachman, while he was talking to people, advising people, and he gave also a shiur in the middle to some people. And then he beat all, and that they were very, very impressed by that. And Rabbi Nachman spent time with each of them, and each one went to a different city, and eventually they would come to Rabbi Nachman, by Rosh Hashanah, they became followers of Rabbi Nachman. They were meisim like this. And these weren't simple people. These were very, very brilliant, brilliant people. They weren't peasants. Let's talk a little bit about the kind of a day that we have reported from the Svarim. In the Svarim, how did Reb Leibler, how was his Avodas Hashem? How did he live? I think it's impossible really for people like us who are so meshubed, who are so enslaved to this world, to try to talk about, to understand the Avoda of a Jew that completely transcends anything this world. But there is one thing that we could focus on, we could talk about a little bit. And that's Reb Leibler's hachana, Reb Leibler's preparation for a mitzvah. This among all the tzaddikim was unique, even though there are many rabbis that took a long time preparing for mitzvahs. Reb Leibler's avoid in this area of hachana, of preparing to do a mitzvah, which we're going to read together a piece, we'll probably get to that next week. His hachanis for mitzvah was something which was unbelievable. He used to, when it would come to performing a mitzvah, when it was lulav, tkiyah shofar, he would spend hours upon hours pacing in his room, back and forth, thinking and davening and learning and preparing and going to the mikveh 6, 7, 8 times back and forth. The hachanas that he made for a mitzvah was something which is unbelievable. Among the elders of the Hasidim, there's a Masorah that one time he said once, this is what it says in the Sefer, Ani mechinis atzmi ad shenasa haguf mokam lekabolas hamitzvah l'toichai. I have to prepare my body that it should be worthy of receiving this mitzvah. Imagine if we would think about that. To prepare my body, that my body should be worthy, a worthy vessel for the Ratzon of Hashem, for the will of Hashem, to perform the mitzvah. Especially when it came to his preparations for tefillah, for davening, his son, Rabbi Rommel, said that he used to always complain to, even, you know, to the later years of his life, that he wasn't able to finish his hachonis within the zman of tefillah. He was notoriously late when it came to davening. But I don't mean 9 o'clock, 9:30. I mean, he used to daven shachris at 2:33 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's not something we're allowed to learn from or we're allowed to imitate. We're often would take the entire day to prepare for davening. The actual tefillahs themselves were not long. Were not known to be long. His achanis, we're going to learn about that. His preparation for tefillah was extremely long. Davening, once he was there, he went. Not very fast, but he went. Sometimes, occasionally, they say that it would be that sometimes there were reports of maravs that would take 4 or 5 hours on a weeknight. And then when he didn't feel that he thought that he was prepared, but he didn't feel properly prepared. We don't even know what that means. We don't know what that means. He ate once a day at 11 o'clock at night. He ate once in 24 hours. And, he would have a small piece, half a piece of bread, and sometimes a little piece of fish and a little kichel. And that's what he ate his entire life, except for Shabbos and Yontif, where he didn't eat much more, but he ate a Suda's mitzvah. But every day of his life, this is what he ate, at 11 o'clock at night. That's all he ate in 24 hours. The way that he would get up in the morning, it says in the Svarim that he would wake up. I mean, he only slept for a few hours, but he would wake up and he would scream out. When he opened his eyes, he would scream out, Anna, Anna, Avdu de Kutshabrichu, I am a servant of Hashem. But they said they used to hear it down for blocks. A scream, Anna Avdu de Kutshabrichu. If I try that once in my house, you know, I get, throwing pillows in it. Anna Avdu de Kutshabrichu. Right? I am an Eved of Hashem. I am an Eved of Hashem. Usually his achanis would go until, at least until after, his preparations would go until after midday. That was the earliest time, was after midday, when he would begin to daven shachris. Usually it was later than that. His davening was with koilei sebrachim. His davening was screaming and very loud. So they once asked Reb Tzadik from Lublin, why does Reb Leibel daven so loud? The Ishbitzer, the Rebbe, the Rebbe of both of them, the Ishbitzer was known, davened very, very quietly, davened. He hardly moved, he davened in silence. So the Kohen Reb Tzadik said, Etzloi haisa tza'aka yoytzes me'ala. He's not trying to scream, it just comes out of him. He's not trying that. It just comes out. There's nothing he could do to hold back. That's the way it comes from him. He davened alone. He did not daven together with the minyan generally, except Shabbos, Yontif would come out. He davened in the room where the room had a little window, a little opening into the shul. He davened by himself in that room. And he always kept, he was very big on having candles all the time. Where he, in his room, there had to always be candles lit. Oil candles were always lit. And it says in one of the Svarim that one time, his talis got caught in the candle, and his talis caught on fire, and he didn't notice this. He was by davening, and he was walking back and forth, and the shamans start to smell something, you know, from the room. And he started to bang on the door, and he's screaming at Rebbe. Rebbe's banging the door, and Reb Leibel didn't answer until the Shamas with another Chevraman, they went and they smashed, they broke down the door, and they found that Reb Leibel's talis was completely on fire, and he was surrounded with this fire, his talis was, and the Shamas went over, and he grabbed the talis with the other guy, and they pulled the Rebbe out of it, and then the Rebbe all of a sudden, came to his, to this world, And he said, what are you doing? Why are you hitting me? What's the matter with you? And they explained to the Rebbe that, you know, the whole Beis Medrash is going to go up in a minute. And that he himself was already on fire. And he was on fire. And it was a different kind of a fire besides the fire that was burning his talis, there was a fire in Reb Leibel. It's hard for us to understand. He used to daven the nusach of the Balatanya. All the tzaddikim from Ishbitzeh and Reb Leibel daven the nusach of the Balatanya of the Alter Rebbe, Nusach Ari, what's called now the Nusach Ari, except the Tzur Yisrael. You know that in the Nusach Ari in the Lubavitcher Siddur, they don't say Tzur Yisrael. The Tanya started from the Nemar,
Galeno Hashem Tzavok Yishmael. They didn't say Tzu Yisrael. So the Mea Shiloach, the old Rebbe from Ishbitz, said that the Nusach of the Baal Tanya is beautiful. I love it. And that's the way I'm going to daven it. But I can't give up that one thing, the Tzu Yisrael. So they say that the Tzu Yisrael he davened, even though it's not in the Tanya Siddur. And he also would say, Vishom Rubnei Yisrael. So Shabbos at the Lubavitch, even though the Baal Tanya is not, didn't include in the Nusach to say, Vishom Rubnei Yisrael Shabbos. That also he said he couldn't give up. But otherwise, The davening was the nusach of the Baal HaTanya. When I said before that he used to eat at 11 o'clock, the eating itself of this little piece of herring or the kichel, the eating itself would take between a minute and 2 minutes, and his benching would last usually between an hour and 2 hours. Between an hour and 2 hours to bench. For that, it's already good. I'd have a big meal, no? Between an hour and 2 hours, they say that's how he used to bench. He benched once a day. After he ate that little meal at 11 o'clock at night, and that was the seder of his birchas hamazon. Also, it was with koilos sebrokim, it was with screaming and with yelling. the kedusha, we'll talk about it, we're going to learn that piece next week, about the hachana lemitzvah, so make sure you bring pages next week. But the kedusha of Reb Leibler, again, almost in every piece of Torah Samus and Imri Amos, you'll find that Reb Leibler discussed. We're going to learn a few of these pieces, the inyan of kedusha sabrist, the holiness of the bris. Reb Leibler would not wear the same shoes in the house that he wore in the bathroom. He had special slippers for the bathroom. He wouldn't wear the same shoes because he wouldn't be able to say a bracha to daven in the same shoes that he wore into the bathroom. He had special shoes for the bathroom. He couldn't take the fact that shoes were in the bathroom to be able to, he couldn't daven in shoes that had been in the bathroom. And therefore he had special shoes, only that he wore in the bathroom, that he wore in the mikveh. He wouldn't wear the shoes for davening. He wouldn't wear the shoe in the house. It was only for the bathroom, those shoes. His sensitivity to Kedusha was something that was also lamala manateva. It says in the Sfarim that me'olam never ever did he lift his eyes up anywhere on the street, ever did he lift his eyes up. And that he walked with somebody walking with him, and he never ever lifted his head up from the ground to see anything that wasn't proper. And that's how Reb Leibler was. Me'olam lo herimis einav. He never lifted his eyes up. and that's the Kedusha. When he spoke, there were married couples, women would come. Reb Leibler never ever spoke facing a woman. He always, again, nowadays that would make him very unpopular and he would never get a job as a rabbi and so on. But in those days, it was unusual that he sat and sat with Kedusha and Tahara. It was something that was really, even for his generation, it was very unusual. Shabbos, we're going to learn next week. We're going to learn a few pieces about Reb Leibler and Shabbos. Also, almost every piece in the Torah Samus, Imri Amos is Shabbos. Almost every piece is with Shabbos. Kedusha says Shabbos. Almost every piece. So, Mitzvah Shem, next week, if you could please remember to bring these. We're not finished with the biography yet, but we're going to learn a few more pieces here. Then we're going to discuss how he saw himself as a continuation of the Ishbitza and of the Chayza from Lublin and his connection to the Taris of the Chayza. And then to move along with the influence that he had over European Jewry Bechlal. And then ultimately to discuss the Ptira, the Stalkus, and the legacy that he left behind. Meshachar.